The final matter on the calendar this morning, on the oral portion of the calendar, is the Olaf Johnson versus Consumers Cooperative Association of Litchfield. Good morning. And counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments this morning. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral. And I'll give you a few moments to get settled.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Chelsea Walker, pro bono appellate counsel on behalf of appellants, Mr. Olaf Johnson and his wife, Ms. Deborah Johnson. For more than 20 years, the Johnsons have devoted their lives to sustainable organic farming. It is not easy to be a farmer nowadays, but organic farming provides a new hope and opportunity for farmers to make a living based on consumer interests in organically certified food. But that organic certification has to mean something. It has to mean something to consumers who trust the organic integrity of the products for which they pay a premium for, and it has to mean something to farmers who are harmed by the pesticide applicators' contamination of their organic farmland, and they must be able to receive relief for that harm. As the record makes clear, this is not a case about profits. It is a case about principles and the dilution of organic integrity that will result if pesticide applicators are not held accountable for their actions and if organic farmers have no incentive to report unlawful pesticide drift upon their land. The district court's ruling dismissing the Johnsons' claims related to their organic certification should be reversed because the district court improperly held that it was bound by the Minnesota Supreme Court's Johnson versus Painesville decision and did not decide the case on its own merit. The district court failed to afford any deference to the federal agency tasked with enforcing its own regulation, and the district court failed to recognize it.
Counsel, isn't the district court bound, and isn't this court bound by the decision in the Johnson v. Painesville Farmers case, 817 Northwest 2nd, 693, and specifically at page 712 of that case, the Supreme Court, the Minnesota Supreme Court said, under the plain language of 7 CFR section 205.202B, a third party's pesticide drift cannot cause a field to lose organic certification.
No, Your Honor. We do not believe that the district court was bound by the Painesville decision for at least three reasons. First, the Minnesota Supreme Court did not have the benefit of a definitive agency ruling on the precise pesticide drift at issue in the case or on the regulations at issue in the case. So that's the first distinguishing factor. Secondly, the district court did not have the benefit of additional legal authority providing guidance on the specific regulations at issue, that the National Organic Program, the agency that's tasked with enforcing and implementing the regulations at issue, issued since the Painesville decision. And thirdly, the district court was not bound by the Painesville decision because the court improperly interpreted the regulations at issue. First, and I'll speak more on that, Your Honor. First, the Painesville court conflated separate NOP regulations for...
Could I just stop you there? Because let's just assume I agree with your whole analysis about the Supreme Court conflating the two. And I agree with your interpretation. I'm going to go back to what Judge Cochran started with. In the Johnson v. Painesville farmer's case, didn't the court find that the phrase applied to it was unambiguous?
Yes, Your Honor. The court did find that the phrase applied to it was unambiguous.
All right. And in my understanding, because you also talk about deference to agencies, but
yes.
Isn't the deference only paid by our court to the agency's interpretation if, in fact, there is an ambiguity?
Yes, Your Honor. However, because we contend that the Painesville decision is not binding, the court's ruling that that phrase was not ambiguous is not binding.
And why is it not binding?
Because we hold because we argue that case is distinguishable. It's factually distinguishable.
Well, but the facts, what we're just talking about here is an interpretation of that statute, and so that's an issue of law. That's not a factual issue.
Yes, Your Honor, and we would contend that interpretation of law was specific to the facts in the holding in that particular case.
How is it particular to that when it's an interpretation of the statute? Because you have different aspects of the analysis. The first analysis is, as stated, is the statute ambiguous or not? The Supreme Court said it's not ambiguous. So we just looked at the plain language of the statute. The Supreme Court said, as Judge Cochran highlighted, pesticide drift cannot cause a field to lose organic certification. Okay, that's an interpretation of that statute. Then we look to the application of that statute to the particular facts. But the first instance that I think we're talking about here is the interpretation of that statute. I think what you're challenging and is the Supreme Court's interpretation of it, correct? Before we even get to the factual analysis.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're clear as to what stage we're at right now.
Yes,
in
Your
discussion.
Honor. And I think
and you would agree that as to a legal issue, which is whether it's ambiguous or not ambiguous, that's a legal issue, we have to defer to the Supreme Court on that, don't we?
Your Honor, we would argue that you do not need to defer to the Minnesota Supreme Court, where in this particular case, because this is factually distinguishable from the Painesville decision.
But in terms of the legal interpretation of that particular federal regulation that has already been that the Supreme Court has already spoken to, don't we have to defer to the Minnesota Supreme Court's interpretation of that federal rule?
No, Your Honor, I don't think you do, because this case, there are new facts that make this case different than the Painesville decision. The agency that is expressly tasked with interpreting the regulation at issue came to a contrary decision to the Minnesota Supreme Court on that.
Is there any precedent that you can point to that gives this court the authority to rely on a federal agency's interpretation subsequent to the Minnesota Supreme Court's interpretation?
Well, Your Honor, I would say the closest case would be the Bowles Supreme Court decision. And in that case, the United States Supreme Court held that an administrative agency's construction of its own regulation is entitled to deference and controlling weight unless it's plainly erroneous or inconsistent with the regulation. I think the fact that there are new facts that have arisen since Painesville distinguish this case from Painesville. And I would submit that the Painesville court conflated those distinct requirements that the National Organic Program has specifically held to be distinct. Secondly, Your Honor, the district courts should be determined for the additional reason that the district court did not afford any deference to the National Organic Program, the federal agency that's charged with its interpretation and application of its own regulation in this case.
Could I just talk about that, though? I mean, again, is there any deference owed if, in fact, our Supreme Court has looked at the statute, says this is plain and unambiguous? Do they need to go any further? I mean, because then they don't need to defer because they said the intent is clear from the plain and unambiguous language of the statute. Doesn't that end the inquiry?
Yes, Your Honor. If that's correct. If it is in fact ambiguous, then the district court would be afforded deference. But I think there needs to be both direct deference, the federal agency in this case, and I also think that there is that provision is clearly ambiguous based on the fact that the National Organic Program and the court has reached different interpretations of the regulations at issue.
Okay. So you differ with the Supreme. You're contesting the Supreme Court's analysis that this is unambiguous.
Yes, Your Honor. The Supreme Court did the best that it could with the facts that was provided and the insights and guidelines that it was provided at the time that it rendered its decision. And since then, additional guidance from the National Organic Program has been issued that is helpful and very relevant to this analysis. And that is what the district court should have considered in this case.
I want to go back to something Judge Hooten had said earlier. Even if we agree with you, even if we were to agree that the Minnesota Supreme Court's interpretation was erroneous and there's new information that we should look at, aren't we still bound by the Supreme Court's current interpretation of the statute, just as the district court was? What, in other words, I guess my question is, what authority, we're only an error-correcting court. We cannot set precedent or set new standards, and I mean, we just got our hands slapped about a week and a half ago by the Supreme Court saying, "Thou shalt follow our precedent." What authority would we have to come up with a contrary decision here? Can you point us to any authority that would give us the ability to say, "Hey, we need to look at this issue again"? Other than the you mentioned the Bowles Supreme Court case. But is there, in particular, I'd be very interested of knowing of any Minnesota Supreme Court authority that will allow us to take another look at their decision.
And, Your Honor, I'm happy. I'll review my notes for to see if I can find a specific. But I know that the Minnesota Supreme Court, where it presents addresses factually distinguishable situation than that we have here, the court is not, we're not asking the Court of Appeals to reverse a Minnesota Supreme Court binding decision. That's not what we're here to do. And contrary,
aren't you asking us to interpret that federal regulation differently than the Minnesota Supreme Court did?
Yes, Your Honor, we are asking, and because we believe that since that Minnesota Supreme Court decision was rendered, an additional legal guidance from the National Organic Program has been issued that provides guidance and confirms the National Organic Program's
That's a legal issue and a legal analysis. That's not a factual analysis.
Yes, Your Honor, and there are additional facts in this case that distinguish this. Like I said, Your Honors, in this case, there was a definitive ruling on the specific pesticide drift at issue that the National Organic Program rendered on the specific facts. And the district court did not have the benefit. The district court did not provide any weight whatsoever to that. And, Your Honor, additionally, we would argue that the district court's decision should be reversed for the additional reason that there must be a remedy under Minnesota law for organic farmers like the Johnsons who are harmed by a recognized tort committed by pesticide applicators. If the district court's ruling is allowed to stand as is, it will effectively deprive organic farmers across the state of a remedy for a recognized harm. And this does not comport with the Minnesota Constitution. There must be a remedy for a recognized harm. In this case, it is undisputed that a pesticide drift occurred. It is also, the respondent also does not contest that they caused the pesticide drift to occur. They signed an acknowledgement of a violation of Minnesota state pesticide law in which they agreed, they signed and they paid up penalties admitting that they committed an improper application of pesticide that caused neighboring land damages. There's also no dispute that Mr. Johnson has been harmed as a result of this. Organic farmers like Mr. Johnson operate in extremely slim profit margins, and a ruling that effectively will deprive him of any relief for the loss of his organic certification in order to cull and cultivate his land for a period of 3 years. Yes, Your Honor?
Yeah, I just want to stop you for a second because you talked about constitutional rights. Are you talking about, like, the remedies clause?
Yes, yeah, okay. That's correct. Article 1, Section 8 of the Minnesota Constitution, that there must be a redress for an injury, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the Johnsons did everything in their power to prevent the pesticide drift from occurring in this case. And I think that's important to know, is they were not at fault in any way in this, Your Honor. Is they the record makes clear that they posted signs around the perimeter of their property. They passed out detailed maps noting to their neighbors and to the specific respondent pesticide applicator in this case. The appellants called the respondent the week before and, again, asked them not to spray pesticide under improper wind conditions. And even the day before this specific incident, Mr. Johnson called the supervisor, the agronomy supervisor of the respondent, and, again, made him promise not to spray pesticides under improper wind conditions. And that is exactly what happened, Your Honors.
As a practical matter, what are you claiming the damages are here? I understand you are pursuing a damage claim for the lost crops for the year of the drift. Mm-hmm. What else are you claiming as
that's
damages?
Correct, Your Honor. And those damages are stayed pending this court's decision on this appeal. What's at issue is the damages resulting from the loss of his organic certification. He has effectively been forced to transition his fields out of organic certification for 3 years. He's not allowed to produce any crops out of his field that would be on bearing the organic label, because, in fact, if he did, he'd be subject to civil fines up to $17,000 or more if he violated the regulations. So he's
could he just raise non-organic food on it as long as he doesn't apply any pesticides that would, you know, affect his 3 year period of dormancy?
Your Honor, he could. It's not that simple. First of all, his profit margins would be significantly less than they would be for organic products. Secondly, it's very difficult to secure contracts for the sale of non-organic products on such a short time frame when you already have contracts in place for the sale of organic goods. So I think it would be very difficult. And I also think, Your Honor, that would be an issue that would go to damages. I think a jury, that would be a question for the jury. And I think that a rural jury would find that Mr. Johnson and his wife, Deborah Johnson, like many organic farmers across the state, should be entitled to a remedy for the loss of their organic certification. And if they aren't, Your Honor, then no farmer would be incentivized to report organic. And I see that I think I'm close to out of time.
I think you are out of time, but you can complete your answer.
That no organic farmer would be incentivized to report pesticide drift on their land.
Could I just ask a follow up question though? As part of your damages that you're going to be presenting, could you include those other couple of years?
The three years? Absolutely, Your Honor.
As part of that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I just want to add also one other point.
If you can include it, what are the damages above and beyond that? I understand he's decertified, but as part of that, if you're able to claim for the years he can't really do organic farming, how is he further damaged by the decertification?
Because he's not allowed to cultivate any of his land as organic, Your Honor. It's essentially will be rendered.
I mean, but couldn't that be made part of your damage claim?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we certainly, and that's what we're asking the court to do, is that we're asking the court to allow the Johnsons' claims related to their loss of organic certification to be presented to a jury and to let a jury make that decision. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning again, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Matthew Morley. I represent the respondent, Consumers Cooperative of Litchfield. Your Honors, it's already been discussed plenty, but at its most basic core, this case is about the issue of stare decisis. This issue has been decided by the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Can I just ask a question, though, about the remedies? I'm just trying to understand, because it usually comes down to the money.
Right.
By virtue of the fact of this Johnson case, what is the practical effect on their claim for damages? Are they going to be able to claim damages for each year
so
that they're out of commission,
Your Honor,
because of this, and the premium profits they would have made if they had been able to do organic farming?
Yeah, if I understand, Your Honor, if this case were to be reversed.
Right.
Those claims related to the 3 years post-drift would all be damages claims made at
all
trial.
Right.
The effect of this case dismissing these organic-related claims is basically to pare down the damages claim to just the alfalfa crop that was in the ground in June of 2014 when this drift occurred.
So they basically don't have any claim. You're claiming under Johnson they really don't have a claim then for the 3 years they're
correct
unable to farm.
And it's not so much a question of damages. Actually, at the Supreme Court level, I made that mistake. I conflated the issue of damages with causation there. It's not a question of damages here. Sure, they've probably suffered monetary loss. The question is, what was the cause of the loss relating to the loss of organic certification? The cause is nothing to do with CCA, the respondent here. The cause is, in this case, the misinterpretation of the organic regulations by the USDA, Mr. McAvoy of the NOP division of the USDA. In the prior case, it was actually the OCIA, their certifying agent, that made the error. And the Supreme Court said a misapplication of the regulation by some outfit that's related to the Johnson's operation has no bearing on the causation of the defendant in the case. So that there's a break in the causal link, which means there's nothing to tie causation to CCA in this case.
Well, in other words, what the Minnesota Supreme Court said in essence is contamination of the farm can only be done by essentially the farmer, him or herself, correct?
Yes, to a point, because you still have the organic tolerance level you have to abide by if you're an organic grower,
right,
which hasn't been violated in either case.
Right, but that's a separate issue, though.
Right,
that goes to the product. It doesn't go to the process.
Correct. Yes, the process is focused on the producer itself.
Right, and what the Supreme Court did is essentially say that you can never have contamination of a farm by a third party, correct?
Yes, I believe it went that far in a footnote, which would technically be dictum. The main holding as it pertains to the facts of that case, which are very, very similar to the facts of this case, is what Judge Cochran quoted at the outset, is that the determination was that pesticide drift by a third party cannot be an event that decertifies a field for 3 years. And that's the holding that's relevant to the case.
Their whole point is, though, is that's wrong. They had the federal agency decertify them because of a pesticide drift.
Well.
So in that that's so blatantly wrong, as evidenced in this case, they're saying that distinguishes this case from Johnson.
I understand their argument, but with all due respect to Mr. McAvoy, his opinion is wrong. When you compare it to the extensive commentary of the NOP regulations themselves, the drafters set out a process-based system, which Judge Reyes has already commented on, where their focus is not necessarily on the content of the product, it's on the processes used. And it's very clear in the comments that if there's some sort of a residue testing done on an organic product that determines that there is a residue present of a prohibited substance, you then need to look at the cause of it. Was it an application by the organic producer themselves, or was it from some other outside source? And the comments are very clear that in the case of an intentional application by the producer, that's when we get into talking about decertification. It says nothing about decertifying in the case of drift.
You know, as I understand it, though, weren't all these regulations produced, though, to favor the consumer?
The regulations...
To make sure the consumer is getting what they bargained for?
You know...
In paying the higher premium for
organic
food?
That is one side of a balancing test that the NOP needed to do in creating the regulations. Yes, on one hand, the consumers need to trust that when they buy an organic product, it's produced using a process that they can trust is, at least with regard to the organic grower, is free of pesticide use.
But why would the consumer care whether it's the farmer using bad processes or it's a third party? It still ends up being food that they're trying to avoid.
I understand that, and the commentary touches on that. There's an excerpt in our brief that talks about an emergency pest management program. And in there, they talk about usual drift claims, and they talk about balancing the need of, on one hand, what I already talked about, the consumer's expectations, but on the other hand, protecting the organic growers. Because a zero-tolerance system, and by the way, the comments say several times this is not a zero-tolerance system, but a zero-tolerance system, which in his testimony, Mr. Johnson says he believes is the case, could not protect the organic growers because there would be unintended contamination of organic products all the time. There would constantly be decertification, and not always in ways where there could be a claim against another party who could be at fault or responsible for monetary losses. We're talking about drift from miles away. There have been cases where drift comes from an unknown area, and there's measurable residues on organic products. So, or animals moving from a conventional field to an organic field and contaminating. That's nobody's fault, and that harms the organic producer. It's a system that just can't survive if it's a zero-tolerance approach to the presence of any detectable amount of pesticides.
Didn't the Supreme Court really conflate those two standards, the one in terms of measuring the product versus the yes or no of the process itself? Because with the product, you have that 5% buffer zone.
Right.
But the way, I'm struggling with the Johnson case when it interpreted apply to and said it was ambiguous and says it only applies to the intentional behavior of the producer. I mean, where's this, their support in the plain language of that statute that apply to means it's only apply, the pesticides are only being applied by the producer, the farmer?
As I understand how the Supreme Court analyzed the issue, they looked at both the plain language of not only the regulation 205-202B, but also the Organic Foods Production Act, which basically says the same thing. It also uses the word applied with the three-year time frame. But they also took it in the context of the stated intent that this is a process-based system. And
doesn't that get beyond the plain language then?
I mean, that's up to the Supreme Court. We're back to the stare decisis issue now.
I'm struggling with, I mean, we've got rules of statutory construction, and if it's unambiguous, we just look toward the plain meaning. Bless you. But if I'm struggling with how the plain meaning of apply to is only limited to the producer. There's no language in there that says it should only be limited to the producer.
I know they do say that in a different part of the opinion from the part of the opinion I stated earlier, which is specific to pesticide drift. My comment would be that that's dictum, because it goes beyond the question of is pesticide drift an event that can cause a three-year decertification.
If that's dictum, then is that even binding on us then?
Well, the part of the opinion that's binding is the part that says that the plain language of the statute says that pesticide drift is not a decertifying event. That's plainly stated in the paragraph where they talk about the actual cause was the OCIA's misinterpretation of the regulation as applied to pesticide drift cases.
Okay, and so what's the footnote that you're referring to where they, or the part that you says dictum is a footnote?
Sure.
And on 712, just before section B, the last paragraph there is one where we talk about third-party pesticide drift cannot cause a field to lose organic certification.
Yeah, it's the last paragraph. It'll be on 712, the last paragraph before section B.
Right.
Sentence talks about only pesticide drift.
Right.
Plain language.
Right, but what I'm asking about, I see that part already. What's the footnote that you're referring to that you're stating is dicta?
I'm not sure that I mentioned the footnote.
Was it a footnote or was it a different part?
What I was referring to is what you were saying when they talk about, now I'm on page 710.
Okay.
The comment is, we instead conclude that applied to it used in section 205-202B, et cetera, unambiguously refers to prohibited substances that the producer intentionally puts on a field.
Is that, it's page 710? Is that the first column or second column? I don't see, what paragraph is that?
I'm about halfway down 710. It's at the end of a paragraph.
Okay.
the paragraph, case heading note 19 is the paragraph I'm in.
You know, and if there's some, this is what I'm weighing too, assuming we could address the merits of this case, the underlying merits, but you argue that requiring, you know, zero tolerance is absurd, but isn't it equally absurd if a third party could just completely drench that property?
Well,
and the person doesn't have a, I mean, the farmer doesn't have a remedy? I mean, isn't that an absurd interpretation too?
A third party can't do what you suggest without any ramifications because, and this is why there shouldn't be such a distinction between how land and products are treated under this. Everything is treated the same. Because
they are treated differently, though, aren't they? Because they're treated under two different statutes. You have 505-202 for the process, and then you've got a different statute for the products with the 5% tolerance level.
Yeah. Well, one response to that is that even in the commentary, it talks about how detecting residues in products is one red flag that sends the investigators out to see how the land is being treated.
But the decertification of the land has other consequences. And so following up on Judge Hooten's question and Judge Reyes's question, you know, what remedy then does the farmer have when the land is decertified as a result of drift from a sprayer?
Well, let's take one example that would be more severe than the facts we have here, where there is drift. You can prove that it was caused by a third party, and you know who that third party is. And the organic crops fail the 5% tolerance test. They can't be sold as organic at that point. That failure didn't occur here. But if there's a case where, like
Judge
Hooten
said, but
what I'm
asking about is where the property can't be farmed as organic because it's been decertified. What remedy is there for that?
But that's not the framework that should be in place with a drift claim.
Why not? Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that that drift could be considered something that could decertify a farm because it contaminates it. Okay. Wouldn't then the farmer then would be entitled to seek damages, and you can sell organic crops as much, you know, 50% more. I think the record said something about 54% up to 54%.
Sure.
And so then they would be entitled to go to trial and get those damages, correct?
If a drift is a decertifying event, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's a negligence per se claim, because there's a statute in Minnesota that says you can't apply a pesticide that causes damage to a neighboring property.
Okay, so coming back to our situation here, and let's assume for the sake of argument that they have all the facts laid out. I mean, well, I think they're actually fairly clear that they conceded. CCA didn't concede. Didn't they concede that, oops, we made a mistake?
Yeah, for the purposes of this motion and this appeal, yes, there's a concession that there was drift caused by CCA, but
okay, so
no concession that there's a cause of loss of organic certification.
Right, because of the Supreme Court ruling.
Correct.
But to Judge Hooten's point, doesn't that lead to an absurd result? Because now the farmers are left without any sort of remedy whatsoever. And if let's assume that it is an absurd result, doesn't that run counter to that type of interpretation of the statute per statutory interpretation guidelines?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because this is where we get into the traditional ways that drift cases have been dealt with, and that's in the commentary to the NOP regulations, where you're not looking at, in the case of drift, 3-year loss of certification. You're looking at testing that particular product that was drifted on. If there's physical damage to it where it dies in the field, of course there's going to be a claim for it. If there's a violation of the 5% rule that says you can't sell this product as organic, you can't sell that product as organic. You have a claim, even though you're not for 3 years decertified. But you have a from harvest to harvest, after that point in time, the Minnesota Supreme Court, in a footnote, did outline this. You now have claims if your organic products test in violation of the 5% rule. You have a claim for loss of those crops, but you're not for 3 years decertified because of an accidental drift. Because going back to the purpose of the NOP regulations, that is not a process-based
So outcome. In this case, then, you're claiming that if in fact it is farmed the next year,
Well, later in the same year.
There's no decertification, but it had been farmed, but it turned out that the product doesn't meet the criteria.
Yeah.
Then there'd be further damages.
Yes.
Under those circumstances.
Yeah, and the record shows exactly what would have happened in this case, because in this case, about 3 weeks after the drift event, their certifying agent wrote back to them saying, this was accidental drift, you're not decertified. You can keep producing organically. And then they said, we're going to test subsequent crops, because the first cutting of alfalfa, and that's reserved for trial, was destroyed by the order of the Minnesota Department of Ag. That has nothing to do with the organic regulations. But the second and third cuttings, the OCIA tested and found that the residues were so little, they were below that 10 parts per billion threshold for any substance. They wrote saying, you can sell those cuttings of alfalfa as organic, because there's no violation of the 5% rule or any other tolerance level applicable to organic. If that would have not been the case, if there would have been violations of those amounts, they still have a claim for loss of organic profits for those cuttings of alfalfa and subsequent years if there's a bad enough contamination.
But you still have the issue of the agency issuing a ruling saying, no, you are going to lose your 3-year certification. And it's completely contrary to the Minnesota Supreme Court decision.
And it is exactly contrary. And that was the question I think was asked earlier, is aren't you asking for exactly the opposite of what the Supreme Court said? Yes, Mr. McAvoy's opinion only relates to pesticide drift. And the Minnesota Supreme Court's opinion, applicable to those facts and these, is a pesticide drift case.
Can I ask you this? I mean, isn't causation always a fact question?
No. Not if the facts are strong enough where a reasonable jury can only decide one way, and that's what we have here.
Except that in the Supreme Court opinion in Johnson, they said this there's no evidence of this, and it can't be a cause that the agency wouldn't do that, and here the agency did it. So
well,
I mean. So
there were several causes that the Minnesota Supreme Court highlighted, none of which implicated the defendant there. And this case goes even further, because in that case, it was the certifying agent that made the mistake, okay? And they said, you're decertified, and the court said that was the cause. Here, we not only have an agency, which is the NOP in this case, decertifying, but we've got another cause is the organic producer, after getting a favorable decision from his certifying agent, and at a point in time where he's got no incentive under the law, financially or anything, to seek out his financial penalty, essentially, he goes and does it anyway. So he's essentially, I mean, that's a great mitigation of damages argument.
But isn't that really just to make sure that the NLP agrees with their position and the Minnesota Supreme Court's position that it's not that decertification is not required? What's wrong with doing that? Just make sure that you're crossing all your T's and dotting all your I's.
Well, another problem is when he got his remedy that he requested from the USDA in Washington, D.C., he had the right to appeal. So there's also a waiver issue, which is a causation, because he could have appealed that determination after getting, I guess, the letter he was looking for from Mr. McAvoy. He could have then said, well, but I have residue tests from my certifying agent that, according to USDA publications, show residues
really
that are so low there should be no penalty to me. And that, because, I mean, there's 4 USDA publications in the record here, or at least cited in briefs, and they're all consistent that if you're talking about any residues less than 10 parts per billion, there is no penalty, and you still sell as organic.
So you think that the Johnson case made the causation issue a matter of law then? Is that correct?
Specific to the facts of pesticide drift, which is what we have in this case as well. Yes, that's a question of law, that pesticide drift cannot be a cause of a 3-year loss of organic certification. It, like I said and explained earlier, it has nothing to do with the year-by-year or harvest-by-harvest testing of whether you violate the tolerance.
But don't the
level.
Facts here actually bear out the opposite to that?
How is
they
that?
Did, well, they did lose their certification, 3-year certification of the land.
And they did in the last case as well because of the OCIA's mistake. And here it's just a different agency making the same mistake.
Okay. Well, you're way past your time. And
thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I'd first like to respond to a couple issues that arose during my opening argument. First, Your Honors asked about the Painesville's ruling that the language applied to was unambiguous. But I want to clarify that looking throughout the decision, Painesville says in several places that that non-ambiguity holding was based on the context of the statute and NOP regulations at place at the time in 2012. That context has changed currently. Your Honors, it's pages 710, 711 of the holding specifically say that when the regulation is read in the context of the NOP and the statute as a whole within the statutory scheme. So I want to first make that point of clarification that, again, here that holding would not bind this court, and I think the fact that the director of the National Organic Program came to a different decision demonstrates that ambiguity if the court does not give the National Organic Program direct deference. Secondly, Your Honors, I want to follow up, Judge Hoon, you had asked about a question about whether we could recover damages for that the decertification of the organic land. The Johnsons cannot recover the difference for the organic products crops in those fields versus conventional crops. So I just want to make sure that I clarify that.
Well, I just want to make sure I'm understanding what's going on here, because it usually comes down to, I mean, one of your arguments, which had some appeal, is under the Constitution we get a remedy. Mm-hmm. But the response has been, look, you get a remedy because as long as you're not able to sell organic food because of our contamination, we may be on the hook for damages for that. So I guess in light of that, don't you get a remedy? I mean, what is your response to that?
No, Your Honor. The Johnsons would be deprived of a remedy for the specific, and this is what's on appeal today. The damages regarding the harvesting of those crops at the time is a separate issue. But they would not be entitled to a remedy for the loss of the organic certification because they don't get a difference.
But that's on the assumption that you don't lose the certification. In other words, if you maintain the certification, in the next 3 years, he produces products, and in fact, they're tested, and they turn out to have issues. Then, as I understand it, for those 3 years, as well as into the future, as long as there's problems, that third party would have to pay those damages.
And Your Honor, I think that would be a question for the jury. I can see a situation where there would be a delay in receiving a ruling, a specific determinative ruling from the federal agency on a sort of a waiting period on how to deal with the crops. And with farming, a lot of it is time sensitive, especially in Minnesota, where things. So you know, I think if they're ordered to wait until there is a ruling, that you know there might be damages from that, even if they don't lose their organic certification. But I think that would be a question for the jury at trial. And Your Honors, I also want to respond to a couple points that opposing counsel raised. First, Your Honors, opposing counsel specifically refers to a letter by an individual at the National Organic Program, Mr. McAvoy. I just want to be clear that Mr. McAvoy at the time was the highest ranked official at the National Organic Program. He was the preeminent scholar and expert on organics at the National Organic Program. He was not speaking on behalf of himself. I want to be clear. He was speaking on behalf of the federal agency that is charged with implementing its own regulation. So I would submit that he would be the best position of anyone to give guidance on this regulation. Secondly, Your Honors, And they raise this in their briefs as well, respondent seems to imply that the Johnsons caused their own harm in this case because they didn't appeal what they call a favorable ruling But I want to be clear, I think this is based on a fundamental misunderstanding of what it means, of what organic integrity means. In an industry where farming and your livelihood depends on consumer trust, that a label means what it says, that there is it's produced from land that has not been contaminated with pesticides, that means everything. His reputational harm, Mr. Johnson believed that he watched as his land was contaminated, and this has happened on several occasions. So the moment the harm occurred, the moment that his land was contaminated, not whether he exercised his rights under the statutes and the federal act in appealing that. And the fact that the National Organic Program issued a definitive ruling, and I'm almost out of time. I just want to...
I'm going to give you a few extra moments because the respondent had a few.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. A couple other points, as Your Honor recognized. There is no language in the specific regulation at issue that refers to it as the producer. Where the regulations wanted it to say the producer shall, they did so. Here, the language is absent of who must apply the drift. And specifically, because as Your Honors, I think, and respondent mentioned, It would be an absurd result if a third party applied pesticide drift that resulted in the same contamination as if a producer, organic farmer himself did. That would still result in the contamination of the organic.
Except, how do you respond to the argument of respondent that it's absurd mm-hmm. to say that any amount of pesticide mm-hmm. results in decertification? Because mm-hmm. everyone agrees that no matter how careful you are, there's going to be some evidence of pesticides, even without the drift. All right. How do you respond to that argument?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm glad that you asked, because I think there's an easy limiting principle. Whereas here, we're not asking for land to be decertified anytime there's a suspected incident of pesticide drift. But where there's been a documented incident of pesticide drift here, the respondent pled to a violation by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture that the pesticide drift did occur, where there's no dispute, where it's been documented, it's been investigated. I think here it's a clear case that this would provide, and especially where the farmer has gone through the processes provided by the statute and has exercised all of the rights, had it investigated and has reached a definitive ruling. I think this case absolutely should result in a remedy. I think that needs to be. So, Your Honor, I know that I'm over on time, but. We ask that you reverse this ruling and you allow the Johnsons' claims relating to the loss of their organic certification to proceed at trial. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Very well briefed and argued today. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your assistance in these very difficult issues. Thank you.